you can create a business that does really well and makes a lot of profits, but you can also use some of those profits to reinvest in communities that need it most, particularly the communities that are supporting your brand.
Today's guest, Olamide Aloe, is one of the 1 in 4 Americans who suffers from a chronic skin condition and remembers spending much of her childhood in doctor's offices looking for solutions, where she noticed a continued lack of inclusivity before resorting to YouTube to try and understand her skin. This frustrating and formative experience inspired Olamide to attend UCLA with a goal of becoming a dermatologist, where she learned that around 50% of dermatologists said that their medical school training did not prepare them to treat people of color. While at UCLA, she co-founded Shea Girl, a sub-brand of Shea Moisture focused on young women, an experience that she equates to a fast-track MBA in building a world-class consumer brand. After graduating, Olamide co-founded Topicals, the skincare brand she dreamed of growing up, at age 23, with a goal of creating safe, effective products for all skin tones. In building the brand, Olamide made history as the youngest Black woman to raise $2 million in venture funding. And after launching at Sephora, Topical sold out within 48 hours. I'm excited to share her story with you. Let's get started.
Good morning, Olamide. Thank you for joining us. Would love to start our podcast today with your background prior to founding Topicals, specifically your experience co-founding Shea Girl as a student at UCLA.
That was such a fun experience. And honestly, my journey into beauty and into founding Topicals has been a long time coming. I grew up with a ton of chronic skin conditions, so things like eczema, ingrown hairs, dark spots, and was always a tinker. I was always that girl who was on YouTube finding different concoctions, different recipes that you could use on your hair, your skin, because I spent a lot of time going to different dermatologists and physical and physicians trying to understand more about why my skin was the way it was. And sometimes they didn't always offer the best results or offer the best products for someone like myself who was darker skinned. And in my study at UCLA, I came to understand that people with darker skin tones typically aren't represented in medicine, and therefore doctors don't always necessarily know how to treat their skin. There was actually a very interesting statistic that I learned while I was at UCLA, and that was that around 50% of dermatologists and residents said that their medical school training didn't prepare them to treat skin of color. And so it very much made me understand why my experience growing up the way I did with the medical system was the way it was. And so when I went to UCLA, I knew that I wanted to become a dermatologist and help people like myself who had skin conditions that were a little bit different than the typical ones that we were seeing on television, right? I think everyone by that time had popularized acne or having oily skin, but having dark spots or ingrown hairs was still kind of taboo. And so I was really fortunate during undergrad to become the best of friends with a young woman named Rochelle Dennis, whose father is Richelieu Dennis, who owns Shea Moisture. And while we were in undergrad, she mentioned that she had watched her dad build tons of brands and she wanted to do something similar for young women and asked if I would join her. And while I knew absolutely nothing at the time, I was so excited. And we spent about 2 years in undergrad from our sophomore year to our senior year building a brand called Shea Girl, which was for young women under the Shea Moisture label. And I learned everything about everything when it comes to community building, giving back to the community, building products that people really loved. I feel like it was a fast-track MBA in building a world-class consumer brand.
Amazing. Such incredible experience. I'm curious, what were the actual products and what were some of the, you know, kind of top lessons learned through that experience?
So one of the top products that we had that we launched with was a body wash and body lotion for dry and sensitive skin. I think in those times when you're a young woman, a lot of the products that are geared towards people with dry and sensitive skin maybe look a little bit more mature, or they're not as fun as the other brands that you're using. And so we really wanted to make a product that smelled really great, but was still natural, and the packaging was fun, and a brand that you could really resonate with, very similar to what I've done with Topicals. And I think the biggest lesson I learned at Shea Moisture was this idea of doing well by doing good. And that idea there is that you can create a business that does really well and makes a lot of profits, but you can also use some of those profits to reinvest in communities that need it most, particularly the communities that are supporting your brand.
I love that. So maybe let's move to topicals. I know you started the brand in 2018. Where did you see the opportunity to kind of create a new product line and brand, in an industry that, you know, tends to be quite saturated?
Yes. So beauty is probably one of the most saturated industries, but I think there are niches that people have not even discovered or aren't seeing as valuable. And I think that's what really happened for me when I was thinking about chronic skin as someone who grew up with skin conditions, is that my experience never felt like what the beauty experience felt like. Mm-hmm. And again, I thank my time at Shea Moisture because they really shed light on this idea of the separation between the hair care aisle and the ethnic aisle. There was that separation mm-hmm. of that experience, particularly for communities of color. And I took that same lens, but through the experience of the beauty skincare aisle in the mm-hmm. ointment. They felt super different, super distinctive. One was really fun. One was going through a lot of innovation and a lot of change. And another one was stagnant and not so fun, right? You were buying your hydrocortisone cream next to your eczema ointment, next to the foot cream or foot fungus products. And so I thought, what would it look like to reimagine that experience for someone who wants to have more fun with their routine? What would it look like for your products to look just as good as the other products that were sitting on your vanity versus a product that you felt like you had to hide under your sink? And so that was really the impetus of starting topicals, was really understanding both the emotional connection that the customer had to products in the ointment aisle, which most were negative, and asked myself the question, what would it look like for a brand to exist and for people in that category to have a positive emotional affinity? And topicals came about, and I built the brand brick by brick, very intentionally, with every single strategy that we did to combat what I felt like was missing in the ointment aisle.
And how would you describe topicals? You know, what are your kind of hero products, and you know, how did you guys get started?
Yeah, so topicals is a skincare brand transforming the way people feel about skin. We do that through effective science-backed skincare products for chronic skin conditions and mental health advocacy. Mental health advocacy is super important to us because people with chronic skin conditions are 2 to 6 times more likely to experience depression and anxiety. And so we knew we had to build a holistic brand, one that cared just as much about the outside as it did about the inside, and really shedding light on this idea and this phenomenon of psychodermatology, this idea that it's chicken and the egg. Does stress mm-hmm. cause flare-ups, or do flare-ups cause stress? The answer mm-hmm. is both. And so that's really what the brand is about. And products that we've launched to date that have, I would say, transformed the way people think about categories like hyperpigmentation, eczema, ingrown hairs, are products like Faded, Like Butter, and High Roller. So I'm really proud of how tight our assortment is, but I'm also really proud of how powerful the products are and how they've made waves in the last 20 months we've been on market.
Amazing. I know, you know, years before launching or even finalizing, you know, your product formulas, you built a community focused on BIPOC women with chronic skin conditions. I'd love to maybe hear more about the approach you took to community building and maybe some of the most important insights you gained from this group. I know a lot of successful beauty brands have really been able to leverage learnings, you know, consumer learnings. So curious how you built that community and what came out of that.
I always say, I think I've always wanted to be a tech founder, but like found myself in consumer because of my background at Shea Moisture. And to this day, I tell people, like, I do definitely want to start a tech company because I think that what consumer feels and does, if you can put that with technology, the brand is going to be explosive. And so when we first went out to understand the customer, I think one, I looked at myself as someone who had dealt with a chronic skin condition and started to ask myself questions like, where do you find out about products for your skin? Mm-hmm. How do you feel about your skin? What makes you tick? Who are the authorities in this category? And I think we started to build a strategy for go-to-market around those things. Mm-hmm. And I knew that I wasn't the only one who felt like this. So if I could really boil down what it felt like to have a chronic skin condition and create a way for other people to feel that point of connection, we could create some sort of community. Mm-hmm. And so when we first went out to build this community, we did a game, I'd like to call it. It's like one of those like online quizzes, and it's called Skin, well, it's still called Skin, Sun, and Stars. And mm-hmm. it was like a mashup of your horoscope and skincare advice. Mm-hmm. And the big two insights onto why we built a game that had those two themes was, one, Gen Z loved horoscopes. Everyone is trying to figure out and learn more about themselves, whether it's through science or it's through therapy or through the stars. And mm-hmm. so we knew horoscopes would be a really great wedge to get people to think about chronic skin conditions in a more fun way. And then we knew that people with chronic skin conditions were typically finding out about their skin condition and about treatment through places like WebMD or through mm-hmm. Google search. And so we knew that we wanted to offer the customer information that yeah. would make her life better. And so this game, basically you put in your birthday, your name and your email, and you would select what skin conditions you had, and it would basically print out a chart based on your horoscope of skincare ingredients that you should use for your skin condition. Mm-hmm. And I think it was a really innovative way, again, to show that like skincare can be fun, but it can also get the job done by being educational and help you get closer to whatever kind of skincare management you're looking for. And so we had about 10,000 people play that game in a matter of a couple of months. And so mm-hmm. when we did that, I think investors, brand partners, retailers all kind of took notice of us as seeing this young brand really know how to galvanize a community that most people couldn't tap into. You know, beauty brands haven't always been super successful in tapping into people who have chronic skin conditions because they just didn't speak the same lingo. Yeah. And I think what we did is we brought the fun of what a lot of those other brands were doing and the science of what you'd hear at your dermatologist. And we found a happy medium. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people found community in that happy medium.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I guess part of what you're describing is you're really changing the conversation around chronic skin conditions in a way that, you know, allows people, again, from a consumer standpoint, to feel comfortable and to not feel like it's a hidden, you know, something that you hide and that you're, you know, to your point, it's not products that you're putting on your bathroom counter. So I think that is really powerful. I'm curious, you know, as you connected with, you know, the needs of the topical customer base, you know, what have you seen that surprised you, you know, perhaps was unexpected, and what are you thinking about as you think about product development from where you are today?
So there's a couple of really interesting things. So the first one was this idea that 75% of dermatology clinical trial participants are white, meaning that the vast majority of ingredients and products on the market haven't been tested for efficacy and safety on darker skin tones, which is why we see a lot of darker skin people try ingredients like vitamin C and maybe not see the same kind of results as someone who's lighter skin tone. Mm-hmm. And so what we did from the outset was to build a product that was extremely inclusive and diverse for all mm-hmm. skin tones. So we knew that if we made a product that worked really well for darker skin tones, it would actually work better for all skin tones, because darker skin tones can be sensitive, a little bit more sensitive because of the melanin in our skin. Mm-hmm. And so I think this just shows how diversity and inclusion is really great for business, because not only do we bring in a community that had felt left out, that wasn't being able to or couldn't find products that worked really well for them, we also brought in a new set of customers, or customers who maybe typically wouldn't shop at Black-owned brands because they found a product that really, really worked for their melasma, mm-hmm. for their eczema, or for whatever skin condition that they had that we offered a product for. And so I think that was extremely powerful, one, to show that like diversity was the reason why we were so successful on the product development front.
Yeah.
I think on the other side, it's been interesting over the last 20, 21 months to see that a lot of people who aren't Black are happy to shop at Black-owned brands. And I mm-hmm. think for a long time, Black-owned brands have been relegated to only being for Black customers. Sure. And while topicals will always center Black women and Black folks, our brand is open to all different ethnicities and all people who suffer or struggle with their skin. And so I think it's super important that people look at Black-owned brands not as these niche products, but as products that anyone can use. Because when you think yeah. about it, when we think about who leads culture in America and who leads culture abroad, we see that it is a lot of times it is the Black community, it is African communities. Sure. And so I think in the same way that people consume our content and consume our media, they should also be buying and supporting us with their dollars financially, our products, our services, because we're worth it and our products are good. And I think that the level of care that Black-owned founders and founders of color put into their products, because you know it has to be, has to compete against other people with more resources, yeah. You know you're going to find a product that works really well. And so it's been super interesting to see that a good chunk of our customers are actually non-Black. And so I think that we want to continue to be that brand that everyone feels welcomed into and feels that they can find a product that works for them regardless of their skin tone.
I love that. And as you think about, product development, are there any areas that you're excited about?
Yes. I always tell people that we are what I would say beauty on the surface and pharma under the hood, and not pharma in the typical sense, because we try to make our products as close to nature as possible. And so while we believe in safe synthetics and products that have been tested for safety in different communities, we truly do believe that science trumps all, but that mm-hmm. we should be mindful of what people are putting on their skin or in their hair, or, you know, we think it's important for the health, for people to have products that work, but then for them not to have to sacrifice their health. And so I'm really excited about the ointment category in general. I think like anything in that aisle to me is like very, very fascinating. And I think over the next couple of months and years, you'll see us just continue to push deeper and deeper into the ointment aisle.
Amazing. I love that. I'm curious, fundraising, I'm sure, was another kind of set of experiences. And so from your point of view, what was that like? How did you think about building out your cap table? Would love to, just hear what that was like for you.
Yeah. So fundraising was a very difficult experience for me. I actually spent 2 years fundraising to over 100 investors. And I think there's a lot of different reasons why it took 100 investors to get to where we got to with our seed round. And I think one was inexperience. I think for a lot of young founders or a lot of founders in communities of color who don't have access to relatives or friends or family that are in the venture capital or private equity world, it's very difficult to understand the lingo and the jargon that people use. I'd recommend that people read Venture Deals or watch YouTube videos on the types of lingo that investors use so that you're never caught off guard when an investor uses a certain term. Mm-hmm. Another thing that was super difficult was the fact that I maybe didn't look exactly what a lot of these investors were looking for. I think a lot of VC and a lot of investment is about trust and is about, have I seen this before? Is this familiar? I think investors see thousands of deals a week. And so you need to be able to have a shorthand way to say, like, this person looks like they're going to be successful. And I think, unfortunately, unconscious bias exists. And being at the time 21, young, Black, and a female, I maybe didn't look exactly like the Fortune 500 beauty CEOs that these investors were used to. Mm-hmm. And third thing was that the category I chose, and we spoke about this a little bit earlier, with beauty, is extremely saturated. There are new brands popping up every single day that promise to do X, Y, and Z. And I think I'm rooting for everyone, and I'm excited about all the new brands that are coming in because they tell different stories, but it just makes it really hard for you to break through. And I think investors are worried that you're going to spend all of their money on marketing and trying to acquire customers versus on building a true scalable business. And so I think those three things really helped me back. And so I think there's nothing I can do about it being a young Black woman. And all I could do was just show people that I could build, which is why the Skin, Sun, and Stars game was a really great way to show people that I could be scrappy, I could build something, and people will come. And then I think on the third thing being beauty being saturated is really understanding your unique point of difference and having a positioning that is extremely strong. In our case, there was no one really playing in the ointment space. 1 in 4 people in the United States has a chronic skin condition. You know, access to healthcare in the United States is extremely difficult. A lot of those stats really got investors to see that this wasn't just another beauty brand, but that it felt really different. And so my fundraising experience was difficult, but I think I learned a lot of lessons around just being very sharp on who I stand for, who I serve, and what my product is and what I bring to the table. And I think you have to go into these rooms with these investors with the confidence that you are the absolute best person to launch that product or that brand.
Yeah. Well, congratulations. I think you're the youngest Black woman to raise over 2 million, which is so impressive. So
thank you so much.
Just getting started. So, really, really big congratulations to you.
Thank you.
Yeah, of course. So In terms of marketing, I'm curious, you know, one of the things that we've seen across consumer brands over the past 12 to 18 months is, you know, the increase and inefficiency in paid customer acquisition. And so I'm curious, you know, what have you found to be successful in terms of growth?
Storytelling. I think that we go to Disneyland, we watch movies on Netflix, we go to plays, we listen to music because of the storytelling, right? And I think there's definitely like marketing that goes into that, but your favorite rapper is your favorite rapper because of their story. Your mm-hmm. favorite movie is your favorite movie because of the plot line. And so I think that brands are no different. And I think we're starting to see brands and media companies become synonymous. I love 2PM, which is written by Webb Smith. And he has this theory that all brands are media companies and all media companies are brands. Mm-hmm. And I think that I used 2PM as a resource. It's a newsletter, a business mm-hmm. newsletter about building consumer brands. I use that as like almost my Bible when building topicals, because I think it's important to have a different story to tell. You know, at the end of the day, there could be a product that's cheaper than yours or better than yours, or in our case, Faded is a little stinky. And so it could smell better than ours. But mm-hmm. why people come back is because the product is effective. And I think the storytelling that we do around that skin condition helps people feel seen. And I think at the end of the day, when we think about our deepest desire is to belong, you know, is to mm-hmm. have that connection with folks. And so I think that as a brand founder, you should be thinking about how your brand connects with other people and how it makes them feel. And I think once you deeply understand that person's motivation, it's easy to build a brand that feels so nurturing and supportive of them in a holistic way. And I think that's what we've done really well. And I think that is why the brand continues to go viral or does really well, is that people are excited to tell that story over and over again. Mm-hmm. So, again, I think the best bet is to be a storyteller and to find whatever medium works, whether it's video, audio, written, but find a medium that works for you and tell your brand story.
I love that. You know, kind of shifting gears, I know after the murder of George Floyd, topicals used, you know, your social channels to really take a point of view. And I think was reflective of the fact that you view the company and the brand as bigger than just a company. It's really an agent for change. And so what are any pieces of advice for founders that that are looking to do the same?
I think that experience was so interesting because we were seeing what was happening outside, right? We were seeing the riots, we were seeing everything that was happening. And as a young Black woman, knowing that that could have been my dad, my brother, my cousins, my fiance, you know, was very gut-wrenching. Mm-hmm. And I think that everyone has a God-given talent and they should use that talent to make the world a better place. And for me, my talent and my experience is not always in protesting or in, you know, politics or in other mm-hmm. things. And I think that we need more voices in rooms that aren't just on the streets. We need voices in rooms like Wall Street, you know, in companies that are public. We need it in medical settings. We need it in like every setting. And so I think for me, the only thing I knew what to do at that time with the platform we had, which was to give people information on how to take care of their skin in the event of mm-hmm. Tear gassing. And to this day, that's one of our most reposted pieces of content on Twitter. And I wrote it personally. And at the time we were working with an esthetician who was writing a lot of our content. But I remember in that moment being like, what can I do? And I was so proud of how that content performed because it was not only widely accepted, but it was something that actually helped people figure out how to help their skin in that time, right? Yeah. And so I think my hope and my goal with the company, and I don't think any company is perfect because I think we exist in a capitalist society, but I think what my hope is and what I will continue to do is to use topicals as a vehicle for conversation mm-hmm. and for resources for underserved communities and try our best to do that. Right, to give opportunities to younger, smaller content creators, creators of color, creators that have been discriminated against in any way. And so I think for us, the big thing that we're just going to continue to push on is the community, right? I think like mm-hmm. I wouldn't have known to do that if I wasn't deep into the community, understanding that a lot of our followers were actually going out and protesting. Right. Sure. And so I think understanding that community and using that to feed into not just your product development, but also your marketing, yep. your community give back is how you build a brand that lasts the test of time.
Yeah. And contributes to your authenticity as well. That's great. I think in terms of growth, kind of going back to our earlier point, you have been really thoughtful, I think intentional about your distribution strategy. I know you did a pop-up at Nordstrom and were primarily D2C before launching at Sephora. So curious, how have you thought about kind of that multi-channel approach?
So what's so interesting is, again, I did so much studying. I almost like did an MBA in consumer branding before, even after my time at Shea Moisture, right? I read 2PM. I was looking at what was happening with like the coolest D2C brands.
Yeah.
And I think I could see the writing on the wall before it became a big thing that like D2C was a channel, not a strategy. Yeah. And I think for me, I had spent time at Shea Moisture where they were, I would say, at least 80 to 90% retail. And had seen how that was super helpful, but how like maybe that also held them back in other areas. And I think at this time, people were trying to popularize the term omnichannel. And I promised myself that I'd be a brand that sat in the middle of both. I think retail is a super powerful channel and it's super profitable and allows you to grow without having to invest all the capital to do that. Mm-hmm. But I think D2C and having that close connection to customers keeps you top of mind with them, allows you to get data to better inform your product strategy. And so for us, I knew that retail was going to be a part of our strategy from day one. But I think what I hoped was that we could keep a 50-50 split around our D2C revenue and our retail revenue. And if not a 50-50 split, at least our customers care to be subscribed to our newsletter or follow us on social because they knew that there was some sort of connection to us as a brand they wanted to keep. Mm-hmm. And so we've used retail to accelerate the brand. It's been a really amazing year and a half, actually a year now with Sephora, not even a year and a half, a year online with Sephora. In August, it'll make a year since we launched in stores. But I knew that I wanted omnichannel to be how we drove the business because it was going to be the most profitable because I didn't want to be a brand that raised tons and tons of capital to get where we needed to go.
And in terms of kind of your trajectory as a founder, as you think back on your experience launching the brand and, kind of where you are to date, I'm curious, how has your age, obviously really young, incredibly impressive, where has that been an advantage and maybe, sometimes more of a challenge? And I'm curious if you have any advice, for other young founders that may be listening in.
I think on the challenge side, I think it can be difficult to get people to respect you if they feel as though they know more than you. Mm-hmm. I always want to be the least experienced in the room in some case. Like I love being around people who know more than I do, but I think there is a level of respect that sometimes is missing when you hire people and you're 24, 23, mm-hmm. right? Trying to manage people. And I think that with the ethos of the company, not having respect for others, regardless of their age, doesn't align with who we are as a brand. And so in those cases, it just doesn't work, right? Regardless of my age, if you can't respect me, in other cases, you may not respect a coworker if you disagree mm-hmm. with what they're saying. I think on the positive though, I think my ability to be creative and to not feel fear around mm-hmm. testing and trying out new things. I think because I lack the experience that maybe someone who's worked at a conglomerate or a huge brand has is that I don't know the rules. And because mm-hmm. I don't know the rules, I don't subscribe to them. And I think it's made the brand feel super fresh and new. And so I would do it over again at the same age. And I think what has helped me and the advice I give to other young founders is to make sure that you hire for your weaknesses right away. Mm-hmm. I have hired for all of my weaknesses and I am happy to say that there are weaknesses because you should live in your zone of genius. You shouldn't spend time doing things that aren't beneficial for the business. I think in the beginning, you'll have to do all the things. As soon as you get the opportunity to hire in, hire in. Don't be someone who tries to like hold on to everything. And I think I've done a decent job of like not holding on to everything. There are certain things like brand that I hold super, super close to my heart because it's important to tell the story in an authentic and true way. But there are other parts of the business that I could not even have executed half as good as my team. So hire for people who know more than you do.
Yeah, that's great. Very good advice. So, you know, the 2% is really focused on highlighting stories of people who are working to improve the stats around investment in diverse founders. You know, I'm curious, what do you think it will take to truly get parity in this industry?
It's such a complex issue and it's like systemic, right? So I think there's a lot of systems that need to be dismantled for it to change. But I think from what we can control, I think we need both a bottoms up and a top down approach. So bottoms up, we need to be educating founders. We need to be educating students, really. Anyone who wants to be entrepreneurial or truly we should be teaching entrepreneurship to college students or to high school, middle school students, because it's the way that our country is going to continue to get better. Mm-hmm. And so I think that we need more curriculum around entrepreneurship and around access to capital, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're an entrepreneur, the next step is I have an idea. How do I get it funded? And I think teaching kids that information is going to be really helpful for them, whether they decide to become an entrepreneur or to become an intrapreneur at a company. I think whether you, again, start your own business or you work somewhere else, someone wants you to be entrepreneurial in your role. So I think that's one. I think we need to hire more diverse fund managers because I talked a little bit earlier about, you know, maybe the investor on the other side of the table doesn't understand what my product is because they have never spoken to a person who looks like me who has that same skin condition or that same issue. Yep. And so hiring fund managers who understand all walks of life will be really important because they'll see the value in why the solution must exist. Mm-hmm. I think that we also need to create more opportunities for just like shared ideation. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of brands are creating themselves in isolation versus in community. And I think that we are stronger in numbers. And I think so many times we'll see like 10 of the same brands pop up.
Yeah.
When maybe two people could have been a co-founder on a specific brand.
Yeah.
And so I think just like sharing ideas with each other and being more of an abundant mindset versus I have to keep this like to myself will also push the needle forward in the industry.
Amazing. Well, we are now going to move into our lightning round. These are a series of questions. Feel free to answer with whatever comes to mind first. So we'll start with what is your current skincare routine?
Okay, so I currently use the Youth to the People cleanser. I love it. It's like this, smells so good. It's like this green cleanser and it doesn't foam up all that much, which is really great because I have oily skin and I've come to understand that if your cleanser foams up a little too much, it could be stripping and drying your skin out. My next thing is I use Youth to the People, a facial moisturizer that is a mist. It's a mist facial moisturizer. I use it because I've come to understand that oily skin is just dry skin that overproduces oils to compensate. So I try to really, really deeply moisturize my skin. I use Faded. So I have a couple of different daily routines, but I use Faded every other day. I use tretinoin now, which is super exciting. I got prescribed that by the doctor. And retinol is the secret to like beautiful skin. Mm-hmm. So I am excited to continue to use it because I think it just creates collagen. It just like really helps for the health of your skin. And so I use that every other day. And then I use the Tatcha Dewy Skin Cream. Amazing. Mm-hmm. It literally feels like you're adding water to your routine. And then at night, I use the Like Butter mask as an overnight mask treatment. again, deep moisturization really does help with like oily skin. And then for a body routine, I really love our high roller. I grew up with a ton of ingrown hairs. And so super exciting to have created a product that I wish existed when I was younger. And so I use that on my bikini line. And then I use the faded mist to get rid of any other dark spots that I have. That's why I love my current skincare routine.
I love that. I am a huge user of shea butter. Like I go through many, many jars. So I'm definitely going to try that. Next question. So what is your guilty pleasure?
In what way? Food?
Chocolate, you know, Netflix, like, you know, if you want to indulge, what is that for you?
Ooh, that's such a good one.
Carbs for some people.
I think it's definitely sweets. Like I have such a terrible sweet tooth that I'm always like, okay, stop. You have to stop. Because it's like I can eat one and then I'll eat another and another. And so like I really love chocolate. Like Reese's is like my favorite chocolate ever. Yeah, I really, really love Reese's. And so that's the thing. It's like I'll eat one and then two. Okay, you have to stop or else you're going to eat the whole thing.
Oh, I love that. What motivates you every day?
Creating fun stuff. Like to be quite honest, is like how ridiculous can I be? I heard this quote that says the rules are fake, do you? And I think like since hearing that, for me, my goal is just to create things that actually bring me joy. Mm-hmm. So I prioritize making fun stuff. So I think that laughter and joy are super important. And I think that we don't do enough of that, especially as we age. And so I'm always trying to remain childlike, even though my fiance would disagree and say that I'm a very serious person, but like I love the storytelling we do at Topicals. I love the like fun we have with branding. And I want to continue to do that with this brand and potential future brands.
Anything you want to plug or announce here, whether you're hiring or, you know, new product launch?
We have a new body lotion launching called Slather, and it is an exfoliating body serum, and it has both retinol and AHAs in it. It's first of its kind. It's super gentle though, but it works to just honestly unclog pores on your body, get rid of dead skin. It's like the moisturizer you never needed, and it's safe to use daily if your skin tolerates it, but it's a super awesome moisturizer that we're really proud of creating because again, it has both retinol and AHA in it. So I'm really excited for people to try it out. And I'm really excited for the storytelling we're doing around that launch and the talent that we've casted for our campaign.
Where can our listeners find you online?
You can find me on all social channels at OLAMIDEAOLOWE, Olamide Aloe. And then you can find Topicals at Topicals on all socials, mytopicals.com, and Topicals in Sephora's across the country and in Canada. And then you can also get it in the UK if you buy through our site. So we're trying to make the world a funner place by just helping people manage their skin.
And last question, what is your kind of current favorite female-founded company that you've recently discovered or that, you know, you're a big fan of?
Wow, there's so many. There are so many. Who is my favorite female founder right now?
A few.
That's such a good one because there's just like so many brands where I'm like, oh my gosh. Honestly, I think generally I'm really excited about just young designers and young founders who are just reimagining different categories. I think, I'll just name the companies and then the founders of these different companies. But like, I love Rebundle. I love Meow, the brand. I love Bread Beauty Supply. I love Ami Colet. I love Pierre Moss. I love Theophilio. There's just so many founders who are out there who are telling a new story in categories that feel tired. So I'm excited to continue supporting those brands and hopefully partnering with those brands to continue to storytell.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for your time. It's such a pleasure to have you on.
Thank you for tuning in to the 2% for today's episode featuring Olamide Aloe. CEO and co-founder of Topicals. I think Topicals is one of the most interesting brands in the beauty industry today, and I hope you enjoyed learning about Olamide's founding journey as much as I did.
Stay in touch with us on Instagram at Female Founders Fund and on Twitter at FQVC. And for those of you building the next billion-dollar businesses, we'd love to hear from you. Send all pitch decks to pitches@femalefoundersfund.com and we'll be in touch. And finally, if you're interested in working at one of our 45-plus female-founded startups, explore our job opportunities at jobs.femalefoundersfund.com. Make sure to subscribe to the 2% on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you are listening. And stay tuned for our next episode with powerful women founding and funding the future. While you're at it, if you found value in this show, we'd appreciate a rating on iTunes or simply tell a friend about the show. That would help us out too. Until next time, I'm Anu Dugal, and this has been the 2%.